I wonder, how would you tell your life story or recount a significant event? It would be fascinating to carry out a study on this, but I suspect that we would end up with broadly three groups. First would be those who gave a big, long list of their achievements, something on the lines of, I did this. Second would be those who told the story of how they felt as events unfolded. Third may be those who would respond creatively, possibly with a picture or series of pictures. Or musicians may want to go and compose something. For example, I'm currently reading Elton John's autobiography, and he and Bernie Taupin, his lyricist, have made two whole albums of songs about their career together. A lot of the books of the Bible fall into the first category. Probably has something to do with the fact that they were written by men about men. All that warrior, victory in battle kind of stuff. Like, for example, 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 52. There was hard fighting against the Philistines all the days of Saul, and when Saul saw any strong or valiant warrior, he took him into his service. That kind of language has found its way into much of our faith. And whether it works all of the time, and whether it's a good thing, well, I'll leave you to mull that one over. But the book of Ruth that I've chosen to look at today is completely different. As one article that I was looking about on the subject said, it's a book about women, by women. And that is why I chose it as the basis for this week's reflections. It doesn't have any male superheroes. The stars are the women. And as the story unfolds, two mothers take centre stage. On this occasion, the men are kept to the margins of the story, and the key architect of what happens is one wise, resourceful woman, Naomi. The other thing to note about this book is that it's a story about ordinary people trying to cope with everyday life, and some of it just plain horrid. It's not a record of the deeds of great prophets or priests or kings. Even the opening words are very different from the average, and that's why I chose the Message paraphrase. For example, if you turn to the opening verse of Isaiah, the deeds of the great prophet are set up for you in fanfare style. I'll say, read it. The vision of Isaiah, son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. You know that there is world-changing stuff to come. But try instead. Once upon a time, it was the days in the back in the days when the judges led Israel, there was famine in the land. We are told it is a story, and it begins with real human experience. How do you cope with a famine? Something that those who first heard this would know all about. You can almost feel those hunger pangs and the panic about where the next meal will come from already. We even already have some small understanding with food shelves emptying daily. So do you see what I mean? There's that difference in the feel. Well, into the story we go. The tale is set within the traditions of the time, which was a patriarchal society, which is why the story commences with the father of the family, Elimelech, getting his family to safety away from the famine. As we heard in the readings, this is not a sugar-coated story. As tragedy soon strikes, with the death of Elimelech and both of his sons, Mahlon and Chilion, the women are in trouble now. As men in those days were the breadwinners, and there was no social security. What to do? Naomi had to take charge and come up with a plan. Now, Naomi's best chance would be to return to her hometown. Again, the message brings home to us the human side of this story. Naomi tells both of her daughter-in-laws to go back to their homes. Their best chance will be to stay. And we get a glimpse of just how tough that decision was. Naomi said, "May God give each of you a new home and a new husband." She kissed them, and they cried openly. This is a loving mother who has already gone through hell and is making a really difficult choice to lose what little connection she has left to her sons and go on her own to give her daughters the best chance to start over. This is a mother of considerable fortitude and bravery. Well, Orpah can see the sense of the plan and reluctantly returns to her roots. And it's a shame that we don't get to hear how her story unfolded. But Ruth sticks with Naomi and in so doing commits herself to a whole new way of life as an immigrant. And this is one of the subplots in this story, and it has considerable ramifications for us. Dare I mention Brexit? Elimelech, Naomi, and the two boys entered Moab as economic migrants, or to give them a more up-to-date title, climate refugees. Ruth was now in the position of settling in Naomi's hometown as a foreigner. But there is no mention of checkpoints in walls or fences, applications, tribunals, or citizenship tests. It looks like in those days, countries were far more open to welcoming the stranger, as we see as the story now focuses upon Ruth. She had an idea of how to feed herself and her mother-in-law by making use of part of the Torah law that worked a little bit like a social security system. I'll read to you from Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the alien. I am the Lord your God. So Ruth went to the fields and gleaned what she could from around the edges. And in an unexpected upturn in fortune, was given a warm welcome and protection by Boaz, the landowner. The next part of the story involves Naomi being both clever and pragmatic in concocting a cunning plan that Ruth was willing to go along with. Again, it's the women who take center stage. Boaz does have his part to play, well, kind of, sort of, because he'd had a drink, or two, or three. His moment comes in some clever negotiations a little way along the line to enable the wedding to go ahead. But it is only a minor part to play, as her attention soon returns to Naomi and to Ruth. The story is nearly complete. And what began in tragedy ends in joy, as Ruth and Boaz have a son, Obed. And there is a lovely cameo moment right at the end of the book, as the message describes it. Naomi took the baby and held him in her arms, cuddling him, cooing over him, and waiting on him hand and foot. You see, overjoyed mum and granny. This is such a human story. It's so easy for us to connect with. It's not full of superheroes or saints managing superhuman efforts. Yes, role models to some extent, but rather remote from our lives with tough times and our modest achievements. Well, by biblical standards anyway. And the whole highlight of the story is joy emerging from loss, seen in the birth of a baby to Ruth, who becomes a mother to the delight of Naomi, who becomes a grandmother. It is both as simple and as profound as that. Now, little did either Naomi or Ruth know of their key role in the most important story of all time. These mothers enabled the salvation of all humanity. The punchline comes in the last five verses. Ruth, the foreigner, became the grandmother of the greatest king of Israel, David. And if you trace the family line of David along for a while, you end up back in Bethlehem, his birthplace. On one night, another couple of travellers ended up in Bethlehem with nowhere to stay other than camping out in a stable. It was there in Bethlehem that the Saviour of the world, Jesus, was born. And Mary became a mother.